Welcome to the Mountain Bike Podcast presented by GMBN. It's been a little while since we've actually done a podcast on GMBN, so sorry for that. Apologies for the delay, but we thought this would be as good a time as any to catch up with Rick McLaughlin from the EWS to talk about Zermatt, which was the first, you know, really big race of the year, 2020. It's been a big test for everyone, but also professional mountain bikers and race organisers. So I caught up with Rick to ask him what went down, how the racers reacted to being on the start line, and everything that went down at the specialised EWS Zermatt. Here's Rick. All right, Rick, you're in Zermatt. It's been quite a dramatic year all round, of course, and drama continued with the race. Getting a season at all was it an achievement, and then obviously you had a bit of struggles with the weather as well, but there's all sorts of things going on, even the COVID test, which we talk about as well. It's not running smooth this year, but it's great to see some racing and great to see some riders representing on their bikes and in their kit. What's the sort of atmosphere been like over in Zermatt?
I think you probably never would have described me as being a fresh-faced and youthful-looking, but I think this week's put 10 years on me. It's been really, really tough. The atmosphere here has been good. There's been a great sense of, getting the band back together and the family back together and everybody seeing each other again, but then that's immediately tempered with you obviously can't hug each other or, you know, any kind of contact is sort of forbidden. But it's been really, really good, and I think it was actually, there was sort of palpable relief, I think, especially, the first race we had was the EWSE. And from then on, as soon as there was a bike race to talk about and people had a positive topic of conversation again, I think we're leaving here a lot more buoyant and a lot more positive than we arrived, I think. So, yeah, no, it's been good. It's been really interesting.
Yeah, I think lots of people looking at this race, not just the fans and the racers, but you know, there was a good email off Chris Ball, the head of the EWS this morning, sort of saying that there's a lot of the industry looking at this, people that want to organise bike races, even the UCI, of course, that are looking at putting on the world champs in Leogang. And, you know, there's been so much uncertainty about any sort of sports this year. And of course, Tour de France is kicking off. We've got this. We've got Formula One going on. It seems like there is some sort of you know, really positive racing happening. It'd be nice to see some more, hopefully. I guess there must be a lot of positive thoughts coming out this weekend as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think the ultimate sort of sum up of all the thoughts have been positive. I think it's been really, as a discipline, enduro's pretty much as good as it gets for bike racing to operate in this kind of climate. Do you know what I mean? We had a relatively small pit area which we closed off, which is, that's not great because fans can't mingle around it, but then we're not trying to attract a crowd, you know. Closed courses as well, so no fans on the course, and closed start-finish areas to keep everyone safe, lots of armbands to allow you access into the pits, hand sanitizer, you know, and the bubble system, which actually, I think we had a situation where one of the teams made us aware that one of their members had a positive test. And, you know, whenever you first hear those words, it was like, oh, pit of your stomach falling down a lift shaft sort of thing. But what actually happened was the systems that we put in place came into play. That bubble of people isolated, they were, you know, retested. And actually it came out then that the positive was a false positive and all three tested negative. So it was a case of just getting back to action. But that, you know, we were lucky enough that they had really good contact tracing protocols in place. We had our own, the event organisers had their own, and it worked. And I do think that, as you alluded to there, things like Formula One, football, you know, COVID's here, it's with us. And it's going to be a factor for what seems like a pretty long time to come. And I think having now had a race, we can relax a bit and sort of go, what we put in place worked, and that we can deal with it again, hopefully. Not that we want to, but we now have the tools to deal with it. And on top of that, we are getting quite a lot of positive feedback about how we dealt with it. And as you said, in terms of Liga Gang Worlds, our methods are being looked at as what should be adopted. So, I mean, we were always going to be the bellwether. You know, we were the first ones to have a race, and we felt as an organizer a big responsibility, because, you know, there's not just the riders, there's the mechanics, the masseurs, the, you know, the team managers, the people who work in the bike industry, the extended sort of reach of people whose employment and whose livelihood is based on there being bike racing. And it wasn't easy. The easiest thing would have been not to have it, but that's kind of not what we do. So
yeah, and like you say, well, it's all been thrown at you at the first weekend, but at least you've now got the experience of, right, we've done that, it worked. I guess kind of lucky that the test was negative, but, you know, it didn't change anything in the end. We had a race and it worked. Was there any ever risk of it not happening? You know, once everyone was there in Zermatt, was there still a bit like, oh no, this could still really upset the apple cart and really cause us some big problems?
I don't think that there was. The actual, I think once we got into the week before the race and we were all back into our roles, like an event, like the week ahead of an event, I think that settled a lot of nerves. But I think the race day weather probably came closer to cancelling it than COVID did. That was just, I don't know what it is about 2020. It doesn't like bike racing, whatever it is. But we had that whole scare and got it sorted out, and that was squared away. And then we'd sort of been aware that there was weather coming in over the weekend, but at the start of the week, we were sort of like, well, it's the mountains, you know what I mean? Weather forecasts can change by the hour. Like, it is what it is. And for a while, weather sort of felt like a welcome distraction, or like a sort of a fun problem, if you will. But but then race day arrived, and they've got these like snow cams up on different parts of the mountain. And it was like, you know, in Star Wars, whenever your man has to sleep inside the big horse thing, it was like one of those at the stage start. And you're just like, oh, really? Really? So we sent Rory up on the e-bike. Cut it down to two stages, and he actually said that it was one of those ones. And I think, you know, I live in Scotland, and having ridden bikes a lot in the Scottish winter, you do see it where, you know, you ride up in the snow, there's nothing but white, and then once you get into the tree line, it's actually okay. Do you know what I mean? It's just wet. And I think the cold was a bigger factor than actual, you know, the actual sort of snow element of it. So yeah, two stages, not by any means the world's biggest enduro, but it's Zermatt, and they were tough stages. And I think if you watch that highlights film, you see it doesn't look particularly enchanting to ride. You know, it's very, very difficult. And you could definitely see the riders from colder climates enjoying themselves. You know, the likes of Elliot Heap, Greg Callahan, Robin Wallner, they were all just, yeah, well, this is just like 80% of the riding we do anyway. So,
yeah, oh, really tough weekend for it, but it was great to see just some race in action. I know, you know, two stages seems pretty good to me. It's better than nothing, of course. You say Elliot Heap, he finished seventh. That's a pretty amazing result for Elliot. And really, what's his time? 15:25. You know, 11 seconds faster, he would have been on the podium. So pretty amazing ride there. And, you know, you say people from colder climates, but there's Jack Moyer, Shark Attack Jack from Australia, fourth place. The cream rises to the top, I guess, as we expect. But pretty tight racing still with Jesse.
Jack's an interesting one. Jack, one of the lads sort of said, I sort of said I thought Jack could be in for a podium, and somebody sort of said, really? Like, well, he's from Australia and the weather's said to be bad. And,
yeah.
And I just always remember being stood at the bottom of Fort William that year. Was it Minar 7th, whenever he was on the podium, 6th or 7th? And like that was the year the woods was really bad, and Jack basically, you know, feet up, rode it quicker than anyone else. And you just sort of go, he's just that kind of bike rider. He's just very, very good in all conditions. And we see that, I don't know, maybe it's an Australian thing. You see Troy Brosnan's the same, you know. Elliot, I think actually, I mean, it's not great that we don't have Sam here, but that's, you know, for obvious reasons. But I think if anyone's going to benefit weirdly from Sam not being here, it is Elliot, because he's out of the shadow a wee bit, and he's sort of,
Yeah. He's the man.
But he's clever. Like, he's sort of, I don't know, like, he's a funny, funny character, but he stopped at the bottom of stage two, and I just saw his back tire was a mud tire, and I said, "You got muds on," and looked at the front, and the front was a dry tire. And he said, yeah, no, it's just because there's lots of little punchy climbs on that bit, so I just wanted to make sure I could get all the power down.
Why?
And you were sort of like, that's quite advanced sort of thinking, isn't it? It was pretty cool to see, and obviously worked for him as well, on that new nuke proof.
He's riding a new one, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, I've
seen some spy shots, looks pretty cool.
It looks very nice, actually. It looks like, the fact you can get a bottle in it, I think, is a big positive.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just amazing to see people on bikes at races. It feels like now we've got it, you know, I've realised how much I've missed it just to see a bit of racing action. We're only a couple of weeks away, I guess, from, Finale Pietro Liguria and Finale Liguria. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you get to see plenty more racing. But it was, like I say, sort of cream rises to the top. And yeah, it doesn't really seem to matter where riders are from, as we've seen with, you know, Sam Hill winning stuff in the rain. You know, just great riders get there. In the women's race, Isabeau still won by, 23 seconds. So kind of continuing where she finished last year. Although Morgan Shaw second, Ella Connolly, result from her in third place, where it was a pretty stacked elite women's field anyway.
It was, yeah, it was pretty stacked. And I think the speed in that women's field is really... I think Isabeau's driving everyone to get better. I mean, sometimes you see it go, I think, you know, under whenever Cecile was winning everything, it just seemed like she got faster and faster. And there was almost kind of like just a mental resolve from the other riders that we're not going to beat her anyway. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think Isabeau seems to be pulling everyone along. Morgan Shaw on flat pedals as well. She's gone back to flats on a new team and Pivot, looking very, very good. And Ella Connolly, we saw Ella get that breakthrough podium in 2019 in Madeira. Then she got injured, actually. And, I mean, Nico Turner, who films all the Live to Ride stuff that's been coming out in the off-season, he's our main director here. And he was up in Scotland filming an episode with Ella and couldn't believe the speed at which she was tackling stuff. And, yeah, she had a crash on stage one as well, but still got another podium. So I think... looking ahead, she could be someone who could really potentially take it to Isabeau. Big, big disaster for Noga. Really disappointing that she had a bad race here last time we were here as well. But her not being in there would be a factor as well.
Good to see some racing, like I said. Jesse Melamed won the men's race just in front of Martin Mays. Teo Galli third, Jack Moyer fourth. Jose Borges, who's been actually... he's had some great results, Jose. So great to see him up there.
He was on the podium in the EWSE race, which is...
yeah.
I mean, people are a bit sort of snarky sometimes about e-bike racing, but over 2 days, he'll have probably climbed about 5,000 vertical metres in the EWSE race, and between that and practice. And then he's just jumped on his enduro bike, and he had a really, really good race, actually. Portuguese rides a lot with Emmanuel Pombo's on the same team as him, and Pombo had a very good e-bike race as well. So that Miranda squad looks like it's sort of taking shape nicely. Martin Mays, I think, I don't want to say ticking over, but I kind of got the feeling if the race had been longer, you know, he really sort of would have started to go through the gears a bit. Jesse, what could you say? Just, you know, that's his second win. You have to go back to actually 2017 to Whistler for his first. And he was one of those riders that I kind of thought when he got that first win, that would be it. They'd start, you know, ticking in. But it didn't quite happen for me. A couple of niggly injuries. But on that new Rocky Mountain. And good to see. I think it's really good for that squad as well, actually.
Yeah, like I say, I didn't realise it had been that long since his first win. It sort of... gained a bit of a reputation for being a bit of a wild man, like super fast, but not quite being able to hold it together. And I guess you would probably you know, maybe I would, but, you know, this not being a season, championship season, you might think people are just going to go wild for these individual wins, a bit like it's world champs or something, and throw caution to the wind. But he didn't do that. He, you know, managed to hold it together and take the win. So, you know.
Yeah, after... and to be honest, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about that was Martin Mays's problem. You know, just being a wild man and throwing everything, throwing the kitchen sink at every stage, and sometimes it not working out. And something clicked with him when he worked out, if you roll back a bit and just be consistent and sort of... So who knows, this might be it for Jesse. It'd be interesting to see. I don't know. I think it was a really, really strong performance from him. I think, two stages, although it's a shorter race and there's less chance of potential implosion, there's also, like, you've got to get the bike to the finish, and he did it on both stages and managed it really, really well.
And it always feels to me, when you're racing in really horrible conditions, it feels harder almost to keep your sort of the lid on things. It's so easy for something to go wrong and a crash, a mechanical, and just everything goes wrong. So yeah, it's nice to see him sort of keep everything in control.
What was the worst condition race you ever raced in?
Probably that Champery, the one that...
Oh, that famous Champery.
The Champery, yeah. I qualified pretty good there, and there was that horrendous thunderstorm. So I remember, you know, Matty Lakoinen and Pete had gone down already. And I remember I was probably top 15, top 20 qualified, and people were freaking out at the top, and it was, you know, bouncing down. It was crazy weather. And I remember seeing people like Needling, like shouting and like really pissed off. I'm like, you know... We're here, we've got to ride down this hill, and it was ridiculous.
It's interesting, people's reactions to it, you know. It's
yeah.
There was definitely... What's dangerous about... what I think is often dangerous as an from an organiser's point of view is the vocal minority. Do you know what I mean? The people who don't want to go out in it have no qualms with telling you they do not want to go out in it, and that it's dangerous, and that we know... And then you have to stop and think and go, well, there's 299 other people who haven't come and told me it was... I mean, the amateurs went out EWS 100, and it was just like, the snow and the conditions up there, and they come back and they're all buzzing off it. Do you know what I mean? They're like really enjoyed it and had a great experience. And mind you, the pros are doing it for a living, so I guess it's, you know, counts for a bit more.
Yeah, it's difficult. I always... Actually, once you're out there and it's ticking, like, it feels rad. It feels cool to be battling the elements and trying to, you know, beat the clock. I think it's quite a fun thing to do. But I guess that was down on enduro. It's more difficult where you maybe do one stage and then you've got time to get cold and wet before you get to the next stage. So it's definitely tough. But yeah, at least two stages, you're not going to suffer too much.
What's interesting was there was a lot of... because I'm obviously at the stage bottoms, and you see all the little sort of, I guess a younger person would call them hacks, like little like tricks and stuff that people are employing to try and make their life a little bit easier. And you see, like, the best, like, the fastest people there often have the best little sort of tricks. And like Isabeau, like, bottom of stage one, straight into like the back of her chamois, jacket back on, and then waterproof bag comes out with fresh like winter spec gloves.
Yeah.
Puts them on, and then gets the... You see them in like outdoor shops, those little hand warmers that you break.
Yes.
One of them in each glove, and then off she goes in liaison. Like, didn't hang around, didn't get cold, just got moving again, got her hands warmed up, and you're just sort of like... There's just little things that those guys can do that just make their lives a bit easier. And it's like Jack Moyer, I think he was riding yesterday with four sets of dry gloves in a bag. Just so that any time, you know, like two for the stage, two for the liaisons, do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
I think that sort of stuff fascinates me. I remember seeing Mark Scott years ago. It's one of the first EWS I'd covered, and it was a really muddy one in Tasmania. And he just pulled out of his back pocket, he had like a plastic brush he would do the dishes with. And he'd melted the handle off it and cut all the bristles down so he could like wipe his cassette down so he could still shift and stuff. And you're just stuff like that that I think, it's interesting.
So we had, I'm trying to look at through results, see who had like a bad weekend. Adrian Dave talks about this in the Dirt Shed news. So he had a break a mech on stage one, crash on stage two.
Yeah, wasn't a great day for Adrian. I don't know, I think Well, there's still sort of suggestions that he might have a bit of a bit of a stiff neck, bit of a and some sort of neck tweak on the way into the week, and then crashed in the first corner, a bit like Nico Vullio crashed in the first corner at the EWSE, which is a shame because Adrian goes really well in the mud, and I kind of think we've still yet to see the best of Adrian Day. I still think he could be a real, real title contender. Yeah. He seems to have put on, well, that Tasmania race I just mentioned actually was one of his first breakthroughs. But since then, just his physical shape, do you know what I mean? Like, he's a lot stronger and a lot bigger than he was and can obviously go that bit quicker. That new Lapierre looks like... Yeah, I mean, you know yourself, whenever you've been riding bikes long enough that you can just look at one and go, yeah, I bet that works really well.
Yeah, I mean, anything. I think when you've got Nicolas Villiers in your corner, I think you're probably going to get a good bike, no matter what, you know, what it says on the side.
He won that French Cup as well.
Yes, I know, beat Bruni. Yeah. Bruni's been, well, I can't slag him off, of course, but a slightly lukewarm year so far. He's done a few races and not won them, and, you know, you expect Bruni to win it if he's there. And
yeah.
Got beat by Laurens Vergier, put in 7.5 seconds to him yesterday, I think.
Coulonge has beaten him a couple of times as well, yeah, hasn't he?
Oh, he's having a good turn, you know, a couple of races. But yeah, Bruni, I guess it's, you know, so hard to get your head in the game this year, so you've got to give him some leeway there.
I do kind of go as well at, like, I mean, he's on podiums and stuff, you know, and I do kind of think that cometh the hour, cometh the man, and,
yeah.
I mean, you can see, like, the Bruni that turns up to Worlds every year is basically unstoppable. Yeah. And I kind of think that if those French Cups had been World Cups, we would have seen a different Bruni there, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. What about going back to EWS? Eddie Masters down in 37th. What was the story there?
He tore his mech off on stage one, I think, and then just lost a load of time. One thing about Zermatt is that it's just like, it's sniper alley in terms of mech high rocks. It's one of those places that, like, you're actually monitoring the whole time, getting both wheels passed off cleanly. You're not really riding the front wheel as much as keeping an eye on the back as well. And it's just one, like, we were talking about it over dinner actually, and the thing about riding here for me is that every sort of, like, square meter of trail in front of you is its own little riddle that you've got to sort of solve, you know what I mean? It's really, really complicated. You never really let go of the brakes and just, like, send it on through. Not the start Eddie would have wanted, I don't think. Another man who's travelled a long way to be here. But, you know, we go to two rounds in Italy next, drier conditions.
New hope.
Did you
see the tour?
Yeah, what have tour I said? France, what have I said that out loud? hopefully I'd say Eddie'd be back. He'd be all right.
It's been dramatic. Yeah, Tour de France stage one was just ridiculous. So many crashes. And that was in Nice, you know, the Riviera.
That guy who, like, cycle speedwayed his way into a sign and stuff. I saw that.
Snapped his bike in two. Yeah, it was a good one.
That's the thing, like, I said about enduro being pretty much the perfect sort of bike discipline for COVID. I mean, I can't imagine the stress that they have at the tour. You know, must be like big groups of people traveling daily in often small sort of vehicles, and it's I think that's a huge move from them. But it's only stopped for World Wars in the past, hasn't it?
So yeah, that's right. And you know, I've actually watched it. I've watched highlights, but I've watched the first few stages so far because. I'll have to put a plug in here for the GCN race app, but of course GCN is the road version of GMBN, who predate us, but they are showing all the tour live and highlights and stuff, and they're doing like a post show as well, which has been really interesting. You know, I'm sort of devouring all live sport at the moment. It's the first year I've watched anything that's going from Superbikes to MotoGP, Formula One, and really interesting actually to see the Tour de France, and they're sort of openly saying that it's probably not going to go the distance, although it's a 3-week race there. You know, I'm not sure what the organisers are saying, but, you know, all the pundits and the media are saying it probably isn't going to go to Paris, or you know, it's looking very likely. So
I think it shouldn't be underestimated how important sport is. Do you know what I mean? To sports fans like you and I, and I've been the same. I've been watching everything, and I think that, I mean, I talked earlier on about, I think there's a responsibility as an organizer whenever you actually tally up all the people who rely on the events that you put on for a living, that you do have a responsibility to try and make it happen to the best that you can. And I think, I mean, it's not always appreciated, but I think it's not going away either. Like, it's unlikely that, I don't know, Putin seems to have something up his sleeve, but I think it's unlikely that there's a cure just waiting to be found. And there's a likelihood that we could be spending several years working around it. And the sooner that we actually stick our head above the parapet like we did this weekend and find out how we can run in the face of it, I think it can only be positive, really. I think 2020's been an exercise in finding positives in very difficult situations.
Yeah, and, you know, I know from experience that being a professional mountain biker is not an easy gig, although it looks cool from the outside. Yes, some of them make some money, not many of them. There's a whole host of mid-packers like me that struggle to make a living, and I'm sure that mid-pack is getting, you know, it's harder times for them. I'm sure there's a lot of people taking pay cuts or not getting much money at all this year for racing bikes, which, of course, you know, there's bigger problems in the world, but there'll be a lot of pro mountain bikers that are struggling, I'd imagine, at the moment. So for any of them to get out and be able to race is helpful. So
yeah,
it's good to see, like we say, some racing, some action to come out of this year at least.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think at the Enduro World Series, what has been built on, what historically Chris has been really, really good at, is working with organisers who get it. Do you know what I mean? And like, when we go to Pietro Liguori next, and they've really stepped up, and they've, you know, not that they didn't, you know, it wasn't the case that they didn't have to, but they've gone, look, we want to establish ourselves and put our own identity on our trail network, which is absolutely, like, if you've ridden in Finale, chances are you've ridden actually what's Pietra trails. And they were like, yeah, whatever we can do to help. So our next race is a pro only 100 rider affair in Pietra, which again is not what we want in terms of what we should be doing, but it's a way to put those people in front of screens for our fans to enjoy and to sort of try and help all the teams, you know, stay fit and healthy.
Yeah, I've got to say, I have to apologise to you, Rick, as I have done already, but we should have been there. It was a plan for myself and the team to be out in Zermatt to help produce videos and do some more stuff, which didn't happen in the end, but fingers crossed we'll be there in Italy. And we'll have some more GMBN action you'll see on the YouTube, and of course more podcasts, things like that. But yeah, it's great to have some racing, and it's been really cool to have it on GMBN as well, to be able to host the highlights. It's been big news for us, and it's been, you know, a bit of a delayed start to the year, but it's good to have it on the channel, and looking forward to some more racing coming.
Yeah, we've had some really, really encouraging comments as well, and I think people get it. And I think, you know, as someone who's been a fan of bike racing long before I'm lucky enough to work in it, the great thing about enduro is that it's just the bikes that everyone rides. You know, it's the sort of bikes that people who go out and ride a trail center every other week probably own already, and that's really relatable. And I think whenever people hopefully watch the highlights from here in Zermatt, and you see how bad the conditions were and how fast that pro field is still moving through them, I think it's really captivating.
Or even see Rory on that course preview.
Well, this is it, yeah. I mean, the houseways of the Scottish borders will be, you know, a quiver at the sight of Rory Cunningham back on TV again, yeah. In fairness, like, I do slate him a bit, but he's been absolutely fantastic, you know, and he's a great tool in terms of liaising between the EWS and the riders. We have the Rider Advisory Board, of course, to make sure that what we're doing is in line with what the racers want to do and where they see the sport going. And Rory is obviously very recently an ex-pro, so he's from their sort of, you know, he's from their own stock, and he really, really gets it. And I think he's going to be really, really good for us heading forward. He's been around racing all his life, some big, big results, and I don't think there's anybody better qualified for the job. And God love him, he got a baptism of fire this weekend. There was a few things to deal with, but he didn't flap once, didn't get in a panic. And yeah, I mean, it's cool for me because we're good friends and we're now sort of on the road together. And having a lot of laughs.
Yeah, and you can tell. It's cool. It's good videos. What about the e-bike race? You know, we said, you know, with the EWS Enduro bikes, that's, you know, when the EWS started in 2013, wherever it was. It was kind of the case then, or Enduro bikes have really become a bit more popular again. But I think we'll see that with e-bikes. You know, you go to any, you know, bike park trial centre nowadays, you see more and more e-bikes. Compare it in the UK to last summer, there's way more. And although, you know, e-bikes do have their haters, it's starting to sort of thin out a bit. And I think that's sort of what we're going to see happen to the e-bike racing, where it'll just build in popularity because there's more and more people that want to ride these bikes. And eventually that will mean more people want to race them. So how was it to have the first ever EWSE?
It was absolutely, yeah, it was brilliant. And I think it'll, it's definitely, I think it's going to be seen the way Punta Ala is seen now, as like the sort of origin of something really big. In terms of the EWS, it was really, really interesting to see. It worked well. Basically, where the genius of it lies, it's free loops, and where it's clever is that the liaisons are super tight. So like, they get off a stage and then it's like boost mode, sprinting to the next one. And we had the power stage, of course, which is the new uphill stage. So
that was really hard.
It was, I obviously, with my limited skill level, made it look hard, but it was unbelievably difficult. I mean, the tracks were bone dry then, so that sort of dusty sort of pine needle sort of litter over everything, and just the potential to lose time there. But a couple of the EWS pros, there's this flow trail you could ride down to the finish line of the power stage, and they sort of arrived to have a look at it. And they all got it instantly. They were like, you know, imagine like somewhere like Finale, where you have, you know, people hanging over and roaring and shouting and chainsaws going, and hopefully post-COVID, that's where we can get that to. On a larger point, I don't get where the hatred for e-bikes comes from. I really don't understand it.
It feels to me like it's disappearing. The more people that try it, it sort of changes your mind straight away. So I feel like it's, you know, I've sort of seen it really change with us having EMBN from, I don't know how long ago, 5 years ago, probably being really unpopular, to just more and more people trying it. And that fading away feels like Europe's ahead of the UK and the US is behind the UK. So it's sort of, it's moving west across the world.
We've had enough of things moving west across the world this year, Neil, to be honest. But definitely. But I think it's one of the, I don't know, less sort of appetizing facets of mountain biking, is that when you look back through it, there's always been a real resistance to new technology. Like 29ers, it was the same. It was the same with full suspension bikes. It was, there seems to be this sort of like mentality of no good will come of change every now and again. And like, I've got a couple of mates who don't like e-bikes, and then you let them ride I've got a Santa Cruz Heckler, and within 10 metres, they get it. I think once you ride one, I think it's, you can sit behind a keyboard and pour scorn on them, but I think once you've ridden one, you sort of get it. And then once you've ridden one with one of your friends and you're both on them, I think you get it completely, because it's a different thing. I'm watching Rory do that power stage, actually. I was aware that I was watching a technique that I'd never seen before. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was a couple of gears further down the block than I was, standing quite far forward on the bike and using the power unit to work with. It was just really interesting. I think they're fascinating. And I think hopefully racing is going to do for the e-bike what it did for the enduro bike. I mean, Punta Ala, if you look back at the bike galleries from there, they're all basically trail bikes with, you know, semi-slick rear tires and triple chainring setups on some of them. And I think having a top flight race series brings professionals in. Professionals demand more of their equipment, and that drips down into the bikes that you know, we can ride. So yeah, I think it's really positive.
What I think is really interesting about it is there's like this huge new opportunity for embarrassment. I think there's something almost gallant about crashing, bombing down a hill really fast. It's like, oh, look how brave he was. But when you're going up a hill at 4 miles an hour and you fall off in front of a massive crowd, I just think it's really embarrassing. So I think there's this whole new sport that's going to be, you know, potentially a lot of pros looking silly trying to climb up really difficult things.
I think what's really, they just seem to like, what I quite like winding people up. I'm a bit of an odd man like that, but there's nothing winds people up more. The only thing that winds people up more than my e-bike is my e-bike with handguards on it. It's like the ultimate like incendiary like social comment. And I was riding back home recently, and I got to the top of the trails, and I basically said we've just said about how, you know, that you need to ride them to enjoy them. And this guy, I met these three guys, and this guy was just like, yeah, we all effing hate them. And I was like, oh, nice one, that's intelligent. And then like basically dropped into a trail ahead of them, and then spent the next 6 hours like a complete small man checking Strava to see if I'd beaten them on that trail. And I had, and I was just like, it's just a bike at the end of the day. And I mean, you've got a family yourself, and the amount of riding you can do in an hour whenever you're really busy,
yeah,
it just makes total sense for me. I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah, me too. I love it. And I can't wait to see how the racing develops, really. You know, we'll see. It was kind of cool to see, you know, some big names that were there in Punta Ala, first ever EWS, like Tracy Mosley and Nicholas Bouliard there as well. They're obviously... Well, Nico especially is super into it. I've ridden e-bikes with Nico, actually. It was a pretty rad day out. And he actually got beaten. And if I was Yannick Pontel, you know, anyone who beats Nicholas Bouliard, that's one hell of a medal.
I'd be down the tattoo parlour. I'd have it painted on the gable wall of my house. I'd have posters of it printed out in a wheelbarrow just doing laps of Nico's house. I'd like, yeah, there's not many people have beaten Nico. And... yeah, Yannick Pontel. What I love about bike racing is seeing people who are winning realise that they're winning and really enjoying it. And he was just all smiles all day, and like he was pitting with Nico as well. So I don't know if Nico was enjoying it as much as he was, but he was certainly, yeah, living his best life. And then Melanie Pujan as well, overtaking Timo on the stages at one stage, which the amount of people to have overtaken Tracy, I'd say you could probably write in the back of a postage stamp, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine that. Yeah.
Pujan, yeah, she's definitely... And it's a funny thing as well. We were talking about it earlier because, like, she's a similar sort of size to Isabeau, do you know what I mean? She's very small frame and very, very lightweight, but just muscling that that BH around, no problem, you know?
Benson and Hedges,
yeah.
E-bikes.
E-bikes.
I swear. Tobacco sponsorship. Next, new world.
Right, that, cheers, Rick. Yeah, that would upset more people, actually, if we brought tobacco sponsorship back into e-bikes. Maybe we should just do that. That'd be the ultimate combination.
Yeah. In for a penny, in for a pound. Right, cheers, Rick. Great to catch up. And thanks for providing all the videos for the weekend. Like I say, amazing to see some race action. And we'll catch up in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, looking forward to Italy, and hopefully speak to you from, I think we're actually staying at a bio farm, so when I come back and speak to you next, I may well be sort of, I don't know, green fingered.
Can't wait. I'll see what happens. Well, there we go. There's the podcast with Rick. Don't forget that you can see all the videos from Zermatt on our YouTube channel. We have got the shakedown, so we're catching up with all the riders, getting their feelings for the season. Then the course preview, which obviously changed a bit. The courses, they raced on, was much different in the end due to the weather. But then we've got the big one, we've got the highlights there as well, so you can see what went down in that race. As we talked about a lot, it's just a couple of weeks to the next round, so keep your eyes peeled for more of the same on GMBM.